Translation. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu appeared in order to deliver all the fallen souls. Therefore, he devised many methods to liberate them from the clutches of Maya. In response, please. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu appeared in order to deliver all the fallen souls. Therefore, he devised many methods to liberate them from the clutches of Maya. Purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. It is the concern of the Acharya to show mercy to the fallen souls. In this concern, Desha Kala Patra, the place, time and the object, should be taken into consideration. Since the European and American boys and girls in our Krishna conscious movement preach together, less intelligent men criticize that they are mingling without restriction. In Europe and America, boys and girls mingle unrestrictedly and have equal rights. Therefore, it is not possible to completely separate the men from the women. However, we are thoroughly instructing both men and women how to preach, and actually they are preaching wonderfully. Of course, we very strictly prohibit illicit sex. Boys and girls who are not married are not allowed to sleep together or live together, and there are separate arrangements for boys and girls in every temple. Grihasthas live outside the temple, for in the temple we do not allow even husband and wife to live together. The results of this are wonderful. Both men and women are preaching the gospel of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and Lord Krishna with redoubled strength. In this verse, the word sabha nistarite kare chaturi apara indicate that Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu wanted to deliver one and all. Therefore, it is a principle that a preacher must strictly follow the rules and regulations laid down in the Shastras, yet at the same time devise a means by which the preaching work is to reclaim the fallen may go on with full force. Omiganti mirandasya gyananjana shalakaya chakshurun militam jena tasmai shri guruve namaha shri chaitanya manobhistam stavitam yena bhutale svayam rupa kadamayam dadati svapadantikam vandeham shri guru shri yuta padakamalam shri gurun vaishnavamscha shri rupam sagrajatam sahagana raghunatham vitam tam sajivam sadvaitam sahitam krishna chaitanya devam radha krishna padam sahagana lalita shri vishakam vitamscha he krishna karuna sindhu dina bandho jagatpate gopesha gopika kanta radha kanta namostute tapcha kanchana gorangi radhe vrindavanishvari Vrishavanu Sute Devi Pranamami Hari Priye Panchakalpata Rubhyascha Kripa Sindhu Bhayevacha Patitanam Pavenebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Jaya Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Garadha Sri Vasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. So before we start, I'll forget if I don't mention it now. His Ekadashi finishes at 11:20 something, is it? 11:39. So that's when we can break the fast. So this morning there'll be some Ekadashi Prasadam, and also there'll be grains for those who are going out. They can take the grains and after 11:39 break the fast. Okay. And so this is the verses explaining the, this is Kali Yuga we're living in. And the Kali Yuga means that it's an emergency situation. In Bhagavad Gita it says that there are, in the second chapter it explains about the emergency situation. And we may wonder, what's an emergency? Well, Kali Yuga is an emergency. It means that, you know, 3/4 of religion, of our religious principles, are missing. Sometimes we think it's just truthfulness that's left. But actually we see there's not much truthfulness. Everybody's twisting one another, you know. But actually the purport is in the Bhagavatam that it's 3/4 of all the 4 that are missing. It's not just really, that's how it's explained. So we'll see that truthfulness is very much not followed. And now the other religions, the other 4 aspects are also not followed fully, but something is followed. And so with those bad qualities, in the age of Kali, we're fortunate to be able to take to any religious principle. And so, you know, Bhagavatam is the shining light in this field of religious processes, because it says it's rejecting all cheating religion. In the beginning, Satya Yuga, people were naturally Vaishnavas. They were naturally pure. And so it wasn't difficult for them to take to the spiritual life. And then, obviously, the next stage became a little more difficult. But people were pure, or relatively, they were interested in spiritual life. And then in the third age, they would follow religious principles. And in this age, they don't even know that. Very, very few people follow religious principles. And why do they follow them? Because they have some ulterior gain, isn't it? It's not for the real goal, it's for some intermediate goal. And so it says, where's religious principles gone in this age? What's that verse? Krishna sva dhamma pagate jnana janidibi saha kalu nashta dusham esha purana unadoditaha. So we may ask, where, because Krishna's left, and all good qualities, as soon as Krishna left, the Kali Yuga started to take full force. So it says it in the pages of the Srimad Bhagavatam. In the pages of the Srimad Bhagavatam. So this is why Bhagavatam class is so important. This is Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita class, but this is just as important. And so we see that there's that in this age especially there's an arrangement by the Lord to make sure that we get the medicine. You see, Radha Kulananda Ki Jai. The medicine is it's like when we go to India, we can go to the Ayurvedic doctor and we can just get the medicine straight away. They even grind it, don't they, on the spot. You grind the herbs up and come back the next day and everything's there. There's your package. But when we come back from India, what do we have to do? We have to contact them, give them the message. Then we have to arrange for a banker's draft to go there to cover the cost. And then they have to arrange for it to be sent here. You know, it's probably 2 or 3 weeks later we actually get the result. And so this is like the age of Kali. We can't just get it directly. Things are so messed up. Even so much so that the Supreme Lord had to take people away from the Vedic scriptures. He had to take them off because people were just misusing them. This was after a very short time, a couple of thousand years. And then people saw the following Lord Buddha. And then after some time, when people were a little bit sane, they weren't slaughtering the animals, then he gradually get them back onto the path of following some authority, of understanding there was something different than the body. And so through the agency of Lord Shiva and Shankaracharya, then we started to understand about monism. But this is not really very beneficial for the conditioned soul, because the tendency is to think monism, okay, same thing starts again, the old cycle, I'm God, and the whole thing starts to devolve again. We start thinking we can do anything. So Krishna's arranging so that we can gradually get the real thing. We're talking about acharyas a lot, so this is why I'm speaking about this, acharya. So then he sent Ramanujacharya. He came in the 1017, something like that. And so Ramanujacharya, he started to preach. He didn't preach from the Bhagavatam, but he started preaching from the Upanishads, because people weren't ready for the Bhagavatam. And so Upanishadic lords, he started to introduce that there's three things, not just one, which everybody could recognize, that there's the material creation, and there's the individual living entity, and that there's the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And then he, so it was like Vishisht Advaita, adjusted monism, qualified monism. He adjusted things a bit, but not quite enough. You know, the Mayavadi thought, we can still get around this one. And so, you know, Ramanujacharya had a very difficult time. Look at what they go through, these acharyas and their followers, just to deliver this medicine. Ramanujacharya, he had one disciple called Kroesh. Okay? Croatia. Sorry about that. So Croatia. And he was very, very learned. Ramanujacharya took him with his assistant all over India, North India, South India. And he went to North India and he learned a whole scripture called the Bodhayan Vritti by memory, by reading it once. And then, because he got his assistant, then Ramanujacharya was able to write his own literature. Brahma Shruti, and this was his first, you know, weapon against the Mayavadis. But then Shaivism became very prominent, and so there was Vaishnavism, Shaivism, and Monism, and they were pushing Vaishnavism out. Kolar, I think, was a king at that time, and he was a Shaivite, and he very strongly used to not just criticize the Vaishnavas, but treat them very brutally. And his men captured this Croatia. And another one, actually, there was two of Ramanujacharya's followers, and he tried to threaten them that you change to become Shaivites, and they wouldn't change. So what did he do? He plucked out their eyes. So it's not a small thing when we get this medicine. So great sacrifice. Then Ramanujacharya, he had to flee from, he had to go to Sri Rangam. And there he started to preach very vehemently, and he started to get a following there. But due to this monism and Shaivism, then he had to retreat to a place called Melkot, I think it was. So, you know, once again, even though he'd become prominent, even in his own lifetime, the philosophy of Vaishnavism was being repressed. And so at that time, 100 years later, Madhavacharya came. I think it was 11th century. No, 9th century, sorry. No, 11th century. And he was born near Udupi. And from a very early age, he was known for his bodily strength. And I can't remember much about Madhavacharya, but basically, he started to preach very, 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 very down-to-earth way. He made his points very, very easy to understand. So much so that his philosophy was also down to earth, because he had to try and get away from this Vashishta Advaita, which was sort of giving monism a chance. So he preached, what did he preach? He went like this, didn't he? He says, there's God and there's a living entity, and that's it, more or less. So don't get mixed up. There's a difference. We're not God. And so all his philosophy, many scriptures he wrote around that. But then, of course, the Mayavadis are very expert in using the scriptures for their own particular use. And so they started getting inroads into that. The other Sampradaya was the first one. It's the Rudra Sampradaya. And they were actually also personalists, obviously. And, our great Acharya of the Bhagavatam, what they call him, Sridhar Swami, he was from this particular Sampradaya. Yamunacharya, he was from this Sampradaya. They preached pure monism. God is pure. He's completely separate from everybody else. That was the first understanding. And he's the source of everything. But there was no relationship with the jiva given. And then, so now we have... So he was the first one. Now we've got Madhavacharya who's left. What is he left? Anybody still awake? It's this is a bit of philosophy. You'll have to bear with me. And so from that, we weren't including the proper relationship between the Lord and the living entity. And so then Nimbarkaracharya, who was a propounder of the Kumara Sampradaya, started to preach. Kumaras were preaching something different from what had been preached before. What was the difference? That they were Vishnu worshippers. We couldn't get beyond awe and reverence. And so the first three were Vishnu worshippers. And so then he started preaching about there's not just Krishna, there's Radha and Krishna. And he started preaching about the not just Goloka Vrindavan as the goal, but Vaikuntha, but Goloka Vrindavan, Gokul Vrindavan. And this is, and he preached, what was the philosophy? It's called Svabhaviki Beda Beda. And this is nearly the same as Achintya Beda Beda, inconceivable. But in that philosophy, I the more I read it, the more I get confused, actually. It's very difficult. But what I can glean from it is that, by that philosophy, they couldn't really distinguish the difference between the living entity and God. They had both the same qualities. And so then to clear things up, the highest understanding came when Lord Chaitanya appeared. He improved this to Achintya Veda Veda Tattva, that the Lord is simultaneously one with and different from everything. That we are like the Lord, but we are different in quality. There is a difference. And also he introduced one more thing. What was that? The Madhurya Ras. He introduced the final Madhurya Ras, the conjugal love of the gopis with the Supreme Personality of God. This wasn't introduced before Lord Chaitanya. If you remember, Madhavendra Puri was the first one to exhibit this. He's well known for that. And so then Madhavendra Puri's disciple was Ishvara Puri. And then from Ishvara Puri, Lord Chaitanya was initiated. And so now we come up to the philosophy which we have now, this Achintya Beda Beda Tattva, which has been carried on by our disciplic succession through Lord Chaitanya to Swarup Damodar, Rupa Goswami, the other Goswamis, Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami, Narottam Das Goswami, Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, and down to Jagannath Das Babaji. What else is there? Bhaktivinoda Thakur. Yesterday it was Gaurakishore Das Babaji. Before that, and after that, is Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati Thakur, and finally our own Srila Prabhupada. So here Prabhupada is speaking about the necessity for adjusting things when we preach Krishna consciousness in this age. And I thought I'd split that into a few things after the that there's, in order to preach Krishna consciousness, we have to understand what we're trying to achieve. Prabhupada really worked, he had 40 years to really work on this. Do we have 40 years to work on it? Do we spend the time that Prabhupada spent? In automatically, by the very nature of his situation, he had time to think about what he was doing. Even when he went to America, the first thing he did, he didn't have anything to do. He looked round the harbour of or the city of Boston, came back, wrote the poem that, you know, more or less this is going to be a tough task. I need help. And so then when he went to, then he got off the ship and he didn't know which way to turn, and he eventually found the courier who took him to, or put him on the bus at least, to Butler, Pennsylvania. And then in Butler, Pennsylvania, he was in suburbia, you know, just cooking his own tiffin and sharing it with the family and observing. Nobody really to preach to. You can't preach to, you know, the family are up in the morning, they aren't working, too busy. And he did a few programs, but he was just observing people. Why? Because he wanted to have an understanding how to preach Krishna consciousness. And in the early days, Prabhupada, so he had a goal to go for. And he had a, what they call that word, this new word, what's going about. It's an old word, but it's in new terms. We've got to be careful. What they call that word? It's called
why?
No, it's not that one. It's called vision, that's it, vision. He had a vision. Now, do we have a vision? We've got a vision that 11:39 we take prasadam. But he had a bigger vision than that. Vision includes, he had, what's that word? It starts with S. Strategy, that's it. He had a strategy. And so we're going to talk a little bit about Prabhupada. He took time to have a strategy. What's a strategy? Now, mostly we're in the mode of passion, isn't it? You roll your sleeves up. And we get into it. What are you doing? What do you think I'm doing? But there's no real thought. There's no real thought behind it. And therefore, after a time, we find out that we're inventing the wheel again. And we're treading on people's toes again. And everybody's in conflict. You know, part of the movement's preaching this way, and part of the movement's preaching that way. And there may be a lack of cohesion. And so this is not really what Prabhupada wanted. When he was leaving this world, we'll come back to that, actually. I was thinking, Prabhupada set up four principles. And, you know, a strategy works in the stratum of the mind, this area. It's here, actually, isn't it? It works round here, not here. And so Prabhupada really thought about what he wanted to do. And so he got four things which are real, what can you say, what's the word? They're pillars of our society that we should always remember when we do anything. Our strategy. How are we in line with these four things? And what do you think they are? Chanting Hare Krishna. No. That's another thing. We're talking about now we're chanting Hare Krishna. Now what do we do? What do we have? It starts to get us mind so that we can think about doing the right thing. Hey? Books are the basis. Never forget the books. And what else is there? Preaching is the essence. Utility is the principle. What's the last one? Purity is the force. So this was Prabhupada's strategy. He's not doing anything with these three things. He's just seen that unless these things are actually relevant in everything we do, then we'll lose our way. We'll get, you know, diverted one way or the other. So these things always have to be in mind. That's the strategy for spreading Krishna consciousness. That we have to be pure. We have to preach. We have to utilize the situation in such a way that we can preach in that situation. We have to adjust. And and we have to out by transcendental literatures. We have to educate. Education, in other words, it doesn't just mean books, it means education. And so these things, the four things, are our strategy for Krishna consciousness. So I thought I'd talk a little bit about these four things. And purity. This. And so, without any, I mean, the whole point of our process is that it's mentioned in the Madhurya Kadambini that how do we get bhakti? I spoke about this a few weeks ago. It mentions how we get bhakti. Does it come from the causeless mercy of the Lord, or does it come from the devotee, or does it come from bhakti? Well, the philosophy is it comes from bhakti. So what have we got to do with it? And it explains that actually we can only get bhakti if we're properly situated. We get it from another devotee. And to the degree that we are serious about devotional service, then we can receive that. You know, the Acharya is giving everybody a chance to become Krishna conscious, but who will take it? That's the first principle. And then only when we have some devotion, some purity in our heart, can we help somebody else. The bhakti in the heart of that preacher who gave it to us is impelling him and purifying him enough to want to give it to others. It explains it's the bhakti that a person's got it which has given him the force. And so we have to not neglect the process of Vaidhi Sadhana Bhakti. Sometimes we may get into so many activities in Krishna consciousness, and it doesn't seem to be so relevant that we have to do these things. You know, we may start so many programs, and then we start neglecting maybe some of the program, and then it becomes a little bit more, and then we might think, well, I don't feel quite there today. You know, I don't feel as so fixed up, but we carry on. And then, you know, what happens to our particular vision if we're not so Krishna conscious? It becomes tainted. And then, you know, the old preaching becomes, slanted with material taint. And so it's very important that, you know, only devotees can change. The movement is made up. We talk about the ashram, ISKCON, and this and that. But actually, what's it made up of? It's made up of not necessarily just temples. It's made up of devotees. You know, certain things may go off track. What the devotee can remain on track. If the devotee remains on track, everything in relation to that devotee stays on track. His association, they become on track. So a devotee. So it starts with the self. It doesn't matter. Prabhupada said actually that if I sat under a tree with one devotee who was sincere, that would be enough. If that person really took on board the process of devotional service, then he could give it to everybody, and he'd be pure enough to do that. And so we really have to, no matter what's happening externally, we have to concentrate and make sure our vision is to keep our purity, and then we can actually keep focused. And so this is very important. Prabhupada said before we do anything, there's the morning program, isn't there? A morning program. This should be there. Even if we're living outside, there should be some adaptation of a program. And that's when we can really get our spiritual strength. And so, I was thinking about, have we got anybody in the past from the Bhagavatam who preached Krishna consciousness and he thought, I better chant my rounds, you know, I better do my sadhana? I can think of one. He's the beginning of our sampradaya, isn't it? We were talking about the Acharyas. Rabama Madhava Gaudiya Sampradaya. What did Lord Rama do? First thing. He, as soon as he appeared, he didn't know where he was. So he went down the lotus looking for, and then he thought, this is a bit iffy, you know. He felt a little bit at risk. So he came back, and then he thought, he's got no option. He heard these words. What were those words? Tapa. What does tapa mean? It means we do austerity, or we do those things which we don't naturally want to do. And so the first thing that goes through the window when we get a little bit established is the things which we find difficult. And that's like getting up in the morning. chanting Hare Krishna, listening to Bhagavatam class, going through this austerity. But this tapa is what even Lord Brahma showed us he had to do. Then what did he do? He got the intelligence. And he started to create everything, secondary creation, Vishaga. And so this is, we have to, should remember this. Any other persons in our disciplic succession, or in the Bhagavatam, sorry, who perform tapa? Yeah, I was thinking he was going to come later, but I was thinking in the back. Well, Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati Thakura, you know, he at some point he spent six years of austerity just chanting a whole day. I mean, did he need to do that? He's a Nitya Siddha. Why did he do it? Because he's got a taste, obviously. But it's to, you know, it's a lesson to us that, you know, you have to put the work in. If you put the work in, then you become qualified. Then you get the potency, isn't it? Hey? Dhruva Maharaj. Yeah, I mean, he had a mission, didn't he? He had a mission. I'll, you know, it was like this again. I'll show him. So, I mean, that's good. If we try, I mean, I know one devotee actually was telling me, he says he weren't interested in Krishna consciousness. He took a little bit of interest, and then one reason somebody knew, he started following all the process. And he thought, if he can do it, I can do it. if somebody like him can do this, I can do it. And that's why he started it. You know, it's like I'll show them syndrome. But I was thinking about Daksha. What did he tell the Hariashvas to do and the Shavalashvas to do? He says, go into the forest and start performing some tapasya. I want to create progeny for the whole universe, but they have to be pure. So you have to be pure. So even for producing progeny, we have to be pure. You know, when we take up the Grihastha ashram, it's like the it's like a step up from the Brahmachari ashram. It means you have to be more pure to actually perform that activity. So this is another example of purity. Prabhupada, he performed tapasya for 40 years, struggling to find, you know, trying to get a strategy together, trying to get the right things together so he could preach eventually. Okay, early days of the movement, we hear from the devotees in India. They went to live on Juhu. It was a jungle. They all got malaria. You know, you just keeled over in the side until you got right. That was the treatment. Eventually, when they saw Giriraj Maharaj, he was just laid underneath a table with malaria, and everybody was just carrying on with the service. And then Prabhupada came and says, get him a bed. He's sick. And nobody thought that he needs a bed to lie on. That was austerity. I remember one devotee, he said, when we first went to India, it was Jananda Maharaj, he said, there was no mosquito repellent, no nets, you just slept in the open, and for the first few, just eaten alive. You know, big austerities. Actually, Prabhupada started to cry at one point that the devotees were going through so much austerity. So things don't come without tapasya. And the tapasya for us, we don't have it like that, is to knuckle under and do this sadhana every morning. Everybody, not just the devotees in the temple. And then things are workable. Those who do that, they don't have any problems. I spoke to one devotee yesterday, I'll not mention his name, but he was saying, I asked him, I'm working on the underground, I've got a supervisor job now, so I don't have to work so much, you know, 4 hours a day, and I can do my sadhana. He says, I wanted it like that. I've always been wondering why I have to work all day, you know, for another 40 years. I'm supposed to be doing my sadhana. I want to go back to Godhead. And so he says, Krishna's arranged this for me. And I said, I've noticed that actually. Everybody who takes that austerity and not thinking about, you know, actually applying the philosophy, then Krishna makes all the arrangements. And it starts with this morning program, getting everything together. Every arrangements are made, no doubt. Krishna promises in the Bhagavad Gita, doesn't he? So if we're thinking otherwise, it means, wait a minute, let's put first things first. What's missing out of my life? maybe we'll come to the same conclusion. And so then we've got purity. Now we've got some purity, we can get somewhere. And so I was thinking about utility. This is particularly about utility, this verse. Prabhupada was saying, you know, can you imagine, he comes from a place where everybody's somewhat Krishna conscious, everybody's relatively pure. And he comes to a place where everybody's completely the opposite. How is he going to engage them? You know, the women are the same as the men. So they say anyway. And, you know, and everybody's acting on that platform. He once slipped up and he brought out that, anyway, I'll not say what he just said, but otherwise there'll be a commotion. But he made a comment, and the Matajis in the USA, they weren't nonplussed about it at all. And so the next interview that he had with this particular NBC, I think it might have been the National Broadcasting Company, they sent women cameramen, women interviewer, women technicians. They were all women who were on that squad to prove a point. And they started challenging Prabhupada. But Prabhupada, he didn't budge. And he had everybody actually on his side at the end of it. They were all laughing. But he was making the point. He says, can men have babies? And then everybody realized, no, we're not equal. So no, so everybody has a particular service to perform. So utility. Anyway, we've gone off the point a little bit here, but sometimes something new does not mean it is wrong. So, you know, there's different understandings of how we practice Krishna consciousness and how we preach. But sometimes some devotees will criticize another devotee because, wait a minute, this is not what Prabhupada did. But is that wrong? What do you think? What's your understanding? Hey? Kalidesha Patra. But, you know, how do we apply it? You know, so we don't even change a word of Prabhupada's literatures. You know, we go to the planet of the trees. We want to go to the planet of the trees. Don't change it. That's correct. And then one devotee thought, maybe there's some mistake here. It's only once mentioned in the Bhagavatam that we should go to the planet of the trees. It's not. Then, oh, maybe it's pitris. And then he read all the text. Yes, it makes sense. The pitris. You don't change it. No, we have to. We've got to change things. We change things to time, place, and circumstance. And so, you know, somebody will be using a little bit, changing things a little bit, and coming round the back, you know, and. But it's accepted if it makes a person a Krishna conscious, and that person doesn't lose his Krishna consciousness. This is a principle. Catch the fish, but don't get wet. If we are able to do something, but keep our spiritual strength and remain like Prabhupada did, then we can do it. That's following Prabhupada's instructions. Prabhupada set the example, didn't he? What did Prabhupada do when he went to America? He went to the banks of the Hudson River. He used to go every day, and he used to sit with Mr. Reuben, and this Mr. Reuben was a Jewish immigrant, and he used to speak to Prabhupada, and one day he said to Prabhupada, Swamiji, you're not having any success. And Prabhupada said, oh, I'm very successful. He says, you don't have any disciples, you don't have any followers, you have nowhere to live, it's a temporary place, you know, you don't have any money. He says, I'm very successful. And he said, why? He says, I'm living in this mad hole called New York, and I'm still Krishna conscious. He says, that's my success. And then he said that, actually, I have many followers. Just time is separating me from them. And so, you know, all Prabhupada's associates who are saying, don't go to the West. You know, you'll die. That's the encouragement he got. You'll die. Somebody said that to us about, you know, a new quest we were going. What would we say? I'm not bothered. No, we would really think about it. And so, yeah, we have to time, place, and circumstance. We shouldn't unnecessarily criticize until we've really thought out what is the result of this. Is this person strong enough to do this? Is it being successful? If it is, then we can see that actually that's Prabhupada's mood. I said last time I gave class about how Prabhupada sent one devotee to Eastern Europe and he was being successful when he reported to Prabhupada. And Prabhupada said, also you're doing well. He says, but it's very difficult to preach there, Prabhupada. There's no vegetables, they all eat meat. And he says, well, eat meat then. And he didn't understand what Prabhupada said. He said, Prabhupada, they eat meat. He says, yeah, you eat meat then, to preach. He said, what about my consciousness? And he said, to hell with your consciousness. So in other words, we can time, place and circumstance. Obviously, he wouldn't expect us to do that. But we can change things, providing we are not influenced and providing the result is there. So that's another principle. What about, there's two more left. Books. What about books? What does it really mean, books? Does it mean, you know, a classic? One devotee was telling me that one temple, the marathon came, they got a preaching program. It had gone down a little bit. So they started distributing, just before the marathon, they started distributing, printing more flyers and posters, and loads of people were coming to the temple. And then the marathon started. And they realized there's nobody to preach to those people. What do you think they did? What would you do? You would think so. They stopped printing the leaflets. They stopped putting the posters up. There were too many people coming to the temple. You know what I mean? They're all out doing books, trying to get people to come to the temple. And so, you know, we have to... what is the basis of book distribution? It's to get people to the temple. And so, therefore, the book distributors... the book distributors, they have to be educated. Prabhupada said to the German devotees, they came and paid their obeisances when at Darshan. And before they get up, he says... what is the first instruction of the Bhagavad Gita? And they gave different answers. And Prabhupada said, you're not reading my books. You're distributing them, but you're not reading them. What is the first instruction? You're not the body, no. Tolerate. We have to tolerate. And so, so education, that's the process of book distribution. So, first of all, the devotees have to become educated so that we're not just educated to go out and distribute a book, but we're thinking, why is this book? And the leaders of those devotees who are pushing this Sangha movement, they're thinking ahead. What is the next step? When Prabhupada leaving this world and Giriraj approached him, he said, how will this movement go on? And Prabhupada was on his last few days and he said... by purity, which we've just said, purity and sincerity. And Prabhupada said, no. He said, by intelligence and organization. But unless we read Prabhupada's books and we actually understand how to apply them, how is it education? Education doesn't mean theoretically understanding the books. It means what Bhagavad Gita says, gyan. We have realized knowledge of the books. In fact, we know how to apply what we're reading. Do we all know how to apply what we're reading? We know how to put it into practice in every situation. Then we're educated, and then we can organize, isn't it? So book distribution means reading the books and actually understanding what the books mean in real terms for our everyday Krishna consciousness and the preaching of this movement. Anyway... preaching, last one. Preach to the indigenous people. Prabhupada made this point so many times that we're not just preaching to one class, we're preaching to everybody. It's called, what's this movement called? It's what we're preaching. There's different religions in the world. There's a Muslim religion, they're preaching about Allah. And then they've got the Christian religion, they're preaching Christianity, and then the Sikhs are preaching about Guru Granth Sahib, is it? Guru Nanak, and You know, so they've all, this is Prabhupada, this is religion. Are we religion? What is our? It's Sanatan Dharma. What does Sanatan mean? Eh? Eternal. But what San mean? San means complete. It's a complete Dharma. And it's meant for everybody. It's not just for a particular sect. It distinguishes between Dharma and religion. Religion can be changed. It's for maybe a particular class of people. Sanatan Dharma is not for just one type. It's for everybody. And so Sanatan Dharma means it should be preached to everybody. This is real. Then it actually becomes Sankirtan. Then we get the word Sankirtan is then preached to everybody. Sankirtan movement. And so those who really take Prabhupada's movement seriously, what does that mean? It means that when are we serious in devotional service? When do we really become serious? When we start to follow orders of a spiritual master. And officially, Prabhupada officially took initiation before he actually took initiation. He took the vows later, but he'd actually accepted this process and he'd accepted his spiritual master. But when those who take the vows that they're going to follow the instruction of the spiritual master, then they should follow that and should preach. This is the main instruction. Make our lives perfect and then work for the benefit of society. So, Prabhupada said he segregated the men and women, it says here. So how did he segregate them? He was very intelligent. He used the philosophy very nicely. He segregated them externally on bodily platform, kept them apart. But then on the spiritual platform, they did the same things. So he showed actually achintya bheda bheda, simultaneously one and different. On the bodily platform, they're separate and we keep them separate. It's practical. But on the spiritual platform, he says these lady disciples of mine, they're just like their god brothers. There's no difference. And so, in practicing Krishna consciousness, if a purified soul, it's the bodily designation is not of any consequence anymore. So, and so on this point that if we become serious about Krishna consciousness, what is our main activity in this movement? What is that? Chanting. Hearing and chanting. And what's Prabhupada's mood? Why are we actually... We're undergoing initiation to... Because we're serious, we want to go back to Godhead. But what's Prabhupada's mood? To take as many people back with us. And so whether we're in Grihastha life, or Brahmachari life, or Vanaprastha life, Sannyas life, it doesn't matter. The priority is, if we are so serious to take shelter of a spiritual master, is that that's the priority in our life. Just like this devotee I spoke to, it was in Soho actually, and he'd come to that conclusion, why am I spending all my life just trying to maintain? And so Krishna will maintain Grihasthas as well, don't worry, if we have that mood. There's many Grihasthas are doing that. They're depending on Krishna. Okay, so this is a very nice purport. It's explained that we adjust to time, place and circumstance in order to preach Krishna consciousness and become Krishna conscious ourselves. And we have to have a strategy for doing that. And strategy is already there. We have to remain pure. We have to utilize what the situation for the best preaching, for the best type of preaching in that situation. And for our own purification, we have to become educated ourselves by the book as well as educating others. And then we have to find ways and means to preach. Okay. Grantarod Sri Chaitanya Chaitamrita Ki Jai. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Gaur Premanandi.